We're nearing the end of our study of 1 Samuel. In the last few chapters of the book, the writer alternates the focus between David and Saul. So we get one final look at the contrast between these two men. One opposes God and suffers because of it, and the other submits to God, usually, we can't say always, but usually David does, and he's blessed because of it. Last time we ended with chapter 28. And there we saw the darkness of Saul's soul. In the most bizarre night scene you find anywhere in the Bible, Saul sought the help of a witch, the witch at Endor. He had observed the mighty Philistine camp and was terrified by it. So he sought Satan's help instead of God's, because the witch was an agent of the devil. This really sealed Saul's fate, and it would be the sin unto death for him. That night, God sent Samuel to announce divine discipline against Saul. The next day, God would use the Philistines to destroy the Israelite army and cause the death of Saul and his sons. So Saul's dynasty would be eliminated within 24 hours. Tonight in chapter 29, the camera shifts back to David, to events that appear to have transpired before Saul's dark night. Chapter 27 and the first two verses of chapter 28 are the background for our study this evening. Throughout the book, God has delivered David many times. He delivered him from the lion, from the bear, from the giant, from the mighty King Saul on many occasions. And God has promised to make David king. David has trusted in this promise from the Lord, but in chapter 27, David's faith faltered. His fear consumed his faith. Out of concern that one day Saul would finally get him and kill him, David decided to desert Israel and to join the enemy of Israel, the Philistines. So he defected to the arch enemy of the Israelites. And chapter 27 is really a very sad part of this book. Remember, verse 1 of chapter 27 says this: "Then David said to himself, 'Now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than to escape into the land of the Philistines. Saul then will despair of searching for me anymore in all the territory of Israel, and I will escape from his hand.' So instead of trusting in the Lord's promise of deliverance, David trusted in himself. He trusted in his self-talk, and that self-talk was independent of God. David became a vassal of the Philistine king Achish, and Achish gave David the Philistine city of Ziklag. In service to his new pagan king, David raided neighboring lands, and he brought back the spoils of war and shared a percentage of those spoils with his new Philistine king, Achish. David wanted his Philistine overlord to view him as loyal, so he deceived him and told him that he had been raiding Israelites when in fact he had been raiding the enemies of Israel. David was so effective in this deception that he convinced Achish that he no longer had any allegiance to Israel. But of course, this was untrue. Sin always finds us out. Sin always has consequences. In the first two verses of chapter 28, David will find out about these consequences. David finds himself in a very compromising position. The Philistines are going off to war against Israel, and Achish expects him to join the war effort. Look at chapter 28, verse 1. "Now it came about in those days that the Philistines gathered their armed camps for war to fight against Israel. And Achish said to David, 'Know assuredly that you will go out with me in the camp, you and your men.' David said to Achish, 'Very well, you shall know what your servant can do.' So Achish said to David, 'Very well, I will make you my bodyguard for life.'" Literally, "I will make you the guard or the keeper of my head for life." The Philistine king not only wants David to participate in the war effort against Israel, he wants David at the front. It's not going to be okay if David says, sure, I'll help with the war effort, but I want to be in the rear with the gear. I just want to help with the logistics, you know, moving food in this direction for the army and moving supplies in that direction for the army. I just want to help with the logistics. No, King Achish is not happy with that. Achish wants David as his personal bodyguard when they go into combat. The Philistine king expects David to kill Jews, just like he intends to do, to kill Jewish soldiers, like Achish intends to do. That's the deal. The king's attitude is, you need to dance with the one who brung you. And the king believes that David is loyal. Because of this difficult dilemma, David decides to hedge. This is why he's vague with his answer to Achish in chapter 28, verse 2, where he says, you shall know what your servant can do. As we saw when we studied that verse, that those are ambiguous words. I mean, what do those words really mean? David's saying, you will know what I can do. Those words really don't commit to anything. David is trying to hedge and trying to straddle the fence. Well, with that introduction, then we get to our passage in chapter 29, verse 1. Chapter 29, verse 1 reads like this. Now the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek, while the Israelites were camping by the spring, which is in Jezreel. Back in verse 4 of chapter 28, the text tells us that the Philistines were camped at Shunem and the Israelites were camped at Gilboa. But now here in chapter 29, we're told different locations, Aphek and Jezreel. So what's happening here with these two different passages that appear to be referring to different geographical locations? Let me answer that question first with respect to Israel, then I'll talk about the Philistines. Jezreel is at the western edge of Mount Gilboa in the Jezreel Valley. So saying that Israel camped at Jezreel, which is what chapter 29, verse 1 says, is really the same thing as saying that they camped at Gilboa, which is what chapter 28, verse 4 says, because the town of Jezreel is along the western edge of Mount Gilboa, and so we're talking about the same area. Now, for the Philistine camp, the answer is a little different, because Aphek is not next door to Shunem. Aphek was the staging ground, the staging town for the Philistine armies before they marched to Shunem. It's significantly further south on the map than Shunem is. It's kind of southwest from Shunem, not, you know, a mile away, but significantly separated from the town of Shunem. You could kind of analogize this to how the Allies gathered in Great Britain in World War II. The Americans, the Canadians, the Brits, they used Great Britain as the staging ground for their invasion of Normandy. Aphek was kind of like that. It was kind of like Great Britain, but for the Philistine coalition of armies, the five Philistine armies from their five city-states. They're gathering in Aphek, and then from there, they will march together as a unified force up to Shunem, and from Shunem, they will engage the Israelite army. Actually, the name Aphek has an ominous ring to it. The last time we saw it was towards the beginning of the book, back in chapter 4. There the Philistines gathered their forces at Aphek and demolished, totally demolished, the Israelite army. Even the Ark of the Covenant itself was captured in that battle. The Philistines captured the Ark and they put it in their temple next to Dagon, their Philistine god, their pagan god. On that same fateful day in chapter 4, God removed the inept, wicked men who ruled Israel at that time, which was Eli and his sons Hophni and Phinehas. This cleared the way for Samuel to take the reins of power and to lead Israel for many, many years. Now we find ourselves at the end of the book, at the end of 1 Samuel, and here the Philistines again are gathering their armies at Aphek. And this points to the same thing as back in chapter 4. There will be a terrible military defeat here at the end of the book, and this will bring about a change in leadership for the nation. Saul will replace David and usher in a great rule, a great period of leadership and rulership by this new ruler, David, in the same way that Samuel replaced Eli, Hophni, and Phinehas back at the beginning of the book. Let's keep reading in verse 2 of chapter 29. It reads like this. And the lords of the Philistines were proceeding on by hundreds and by thousands. And David and his men were proceeding on in the rear with Achish. As we've seen, there are five major Philistine cities: Ashdod, Ashkelon, Ekron, Gaza, and Gath. These cities functioned like city-states. Each one had its own king or lord. Achish is the king of Gath, which is the one that David has aligned himself with. In verse 2, there's a military procession. Each Philistine king parades with his army, brings his army before the parade stand. And Achish is the last in the procession, King Achish is. He has with him David and David's 600 men as the final company in the parade, in this military parade. Verse 3 reads like this: Then the commanders of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" I mean, think of this in your mind's eye. Imagine this in your mind's eye. The Philistine kings are observing their Philistine army. They're observing their Philistine army rangers coming by, and they're impressed. Some of them probably were giants like Goliath. Remember, Goliath was from Gath. So this is an impressive Philistine army, and they're thinking the Israelites are going to have no chance against us. And then there's the end of the military parade, and sure enough, the Israelites are in their military parade as part of their army. And so it's understandable that the Philistine kings are alarmed by this scene. Verse 3, then the commanders of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, the king of Israel, who has been with me these days, or rather these years? And I have found no fault in him from the day he deserted to me to this day." This is actually a very awkward position for David. His Philistine overlord expects him to fight against Israel. If he fails to do so, his deception will be blown. But if he fights against Israel, he'll be forever remembered as a traitor. How will he ever have the people's support as their king if he is slaughtering Jewish soldiers, he himself, of course, being a Jew? Despite the view of the other Philistine lords, Achish totally trusts David. In fact, he's gullible. Achish, this Philistine king, the king of Gath, is gullible when it comes to David. Achish's words reveal just how gullible he is. He calls David the servant of Saul, and he says David deserted from Israel. When you think about that, you have to say, wait a second, Achish. Who in their right mind would trust a deserter? Achish defends David before the other four Philistine kings, and he even exaggerates how long David has been serving him. He says, "David has been with me for years," but we know from chapter 27 that David stayed with the Philistines only a year and 4 months, and that full 16-month period hasn't even expired yet. The other Philistine kings don't buy Achish's words at all. Look at verse 4. But the commanders of the Philistines were angry with him, with Achish, And the commanders of the Philistines said to him, "Make the man go back, that he may return to his place where you have assigned him, and do not let him go down to the battle with us, or in the battle, or in the battle he may become an adversary to us. For with what could this man make himself acceptable to his Lord? Would it not be with the heads of these men?" Here's what is going on here in this text. The other Philistine kings are worried about David switching sides in the middle of the battle. It's understandable that they would be concerned about this, because this has happened before. It happened back in chapter 14, where some Israelites had joined the ranks of the Philistines, and then they switched sides in the middle of the battle to attack the Philistines that they had attached themselves to. The Philistines don't know this, but the reality is Saul would never take David back. Killing Philistines won't pacify Saul. Back in chapter 18, David brought evidence of having killed many, many, many Philistines. He brought that evidence to Saul, but that only made Saul more jealous of David, and it didn't endear David to Saul at all. The Philistine lords have zero trust in David. They say this in verse 5, "Is this not David, of whom they sing in the dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s?'" Songs can be very powerful. The song that they speak of was first sung by the women back in chapter 18, not long after David came on the scene after he had killed Goliath and other Philistines. Now, I believe that language about 10,000, David having killed his 10,000s and Saul his thousands, I believe that's language of hyperbole, because by the time the women sing that song in chapter 18, it's true David has killed Goliath and a number of the Philistine enemies, but I think it's difficult to support that he's killed tens of thousands by that time. It's hyperbole, just like many songs have intentional exaggeration in them, like poetry does. Everybody knows it's exaggeration. It's not like it's deceptive. It's exaggeration to make a point, and everybody recognizes the exaggeration. The point here is that the Philistines know the song also. The song was mentioned in chapter 18 and then again in chapter 21 when David initially tried to take refuge with King Achish. Achish's servants recognized him and brought up the song then, so David had to feign madness, insanity, and he escaped. Maybe that's actually another example of Achish's gullibility when it comes to David. The Philistines know this song well, not because they sang it, of course, but because the song is about them. It was about how David and Saul killed Philistines. These kings of the other four Philistine city-states point the song out to Achish, the fifth of the kings, to show him how foolish he is being. Look at verse 6. "Then Achish called David and said to him, 'As the Lord lives, you have been upright, and your going out and your coming in with me in the army are pleasing in my sight. For I have not found evil in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Nevertheless, you are not pleasing in the sight of the Lord's.'" So Achish understands that he has been outvoted. But what's most interesting about verse 6 is the name Yahweh. This is the first time that God's name is mentioned during David's time with the Philistines. And it's not David who speaks the name. A Philistine speaks the name. The pagan who worshipped Dagon, the Philistine god, the Philistine pagan god, Achish swears by Israel's name, though Achish, by the name of Israel's God, I mean, though Achish is a pagan. Achish is probably referring to David's God as a way to drive his point home to David, as a way to impress upon David that he trusted David, that he believed that David would be loyal. So he swears by David's God as opposed to his pagan god, Dagon. David had played Achish very well. That's really what we're seeing here. David's deception has been very effective. with respect to Achish, actually, we're seeing the sovereignty of God play out. God is moving events to accomplish his will. That's another way of saying the providence of God. The providence of God is how God moves the pieces on the chessboard to accomplish his will. He moves events to accomplish his will. The pagans would call it luck. Oh, that sure was lucky. That was good luck, or that was bad luck, because unbelievers use the word luck in order to explain something that is not otherwise explainable to them. But the child of God uses the term the providence of God. Please don't use the word luck. That is a pagan, unbelieving word. Use the phrase providence of God, because God moves events to accomplish his unstoppable will. God is delivering David, as he has done many, many times in the past, but this time he is delivering David from himself. It's like the old phrase, we have seen the enemy, and the enemy is us. David was a man after the Lord's own heart, to be sure, as the text says, but he was still a man, and even the best of men are men at best. Has God ever protected you from yourself? Think about that. Has God ever protected you from your own sinful decisions? Of course, the answer to that question is yes. It's an absolute yes. And if you will swallow your pride and recognize your nature as a sinner, then you will come to appreciate God's gracious, invisible hand of deliverance in your life. You see, what's so shocking to our pride is not that we commit sins sometimes. What's shocking to our pride is that deep down inside, that's who we are. We are sinners by nature at our very core. The doctrine of total depravity is abhorrent to a prideful world, but the Bible teaches it clearly, unapologetically, and quite frequently. We see it here with David. It's true, the sovereignty of God and the free will of humanity coexist, but they are not equal. The sovereignty of God and the free will of man are not on the same level. God always wins. On the one hand, God uses the Philistine soldiers to destroy Saul. He will do that before this book is over. And on the other hand, he uses the very same Philistine soldiers to deliver David, although they do it unknowingly. In our great foolishness, we underestimate God's sovereignty. God's ways are unstoppable. Proverbs 21, the king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. His ways are inscrutable. Romans 11:33. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and unfathomable his ways. In verse 7, Achish continues his conversation with David. Now therefore return and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. Excuse me. Achish sends David back home to Ziklag so as to keep the peace within the Philistine coalition. Look at David's reply in verse 8. David said to Achish, but what have I done? And what have you found in your servant from the day when I came before you to this day, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord, the king? I have to tell you, David is a smooth talker. I mean, he's slick. David feigns outrage here. He fakes outrage because he doesn't want it to look like the other Philistine kings are correct. They've questioned his loyalty, so now he's got to appear offended about this whole thing. What do you mean I'm not loyal to the Philistines, is what David is faking here. You see, once you start deceiving, you have to keep deceiving to protect your first deception, right? You tell one lie, And now the pressure's on for you to tell lie number two to protect lie number one, and lie number three to protect lie number two, and lie number four to protect lie number three. And ultimately, all the lies are told to protect lie number one. This is what happens with deception. This is why, one of the reasons why God says, don't lie. Notice the phrase, what have I done? That's what David says. David has used this phrase on a number of earlier occasions to protest his innocence. He used it in chapter 17 with his brother Eliab, when Eliab was accusing David of just showing up at the battlefield to just watch the battle. You remember back in chapter 17, David's father Jesse sent him with supplies to the battlefield to resupply his brothers. And the oldest of David's brothers, Eliab, is accusing David because in addition to dropping off the supplies, David was asking what's going on here with this Philistine, the giant who was standing there in the valley, and what's happening here? The whole Israelite army is quaking in their sandals, and what will the king do if someone will step in and take care of this giant? Eliab gets angry with David when Eliab learns that David is asking these questions, and so he accuses David of just showing up at the battlefield just so he can watch some entertainment. David responds in chapter 17 with this question, what have I done? Because he was protesting his innocence. Or in chapter 20, David uses that question with Jonathan regarding Saul's accusations against him because Saul was accusing him of being a traitor. And so David says to Jonathan, who is Saul's firstborn son, he says, what have I done? And then in chapter 26, David uses the same question directly with Saul because there had been many years where Saul was hunting him, persecuting him as a traitor. Those three occasions, chapter 17, 20, and 26, are legitimate what have I done's where David asks, because in fact he was innocent there. And that was a legitimate way for him to protest his innocence. But here in chapter 29, David uses the phrase when he's actually guilty. He's guilty of deception. He's been duping Achish into thinking that he's against Israel, that David is against Israel, when he is nothing of the sort. Because David is in deception mode, you have to wonder about all of his words. That's what happens when someone starts playing the deception card. Then the person's credibility in other things becomes in question. In verse 8, David tells Achish that he wants to go and fight against the enemies of my lord, the king. Which king is David talking about here? Does he mean the enemies of King Achish, which would be the Israelites? Or does he mean the enemies of King Saul, which would be the Philistines? I think actually David means King Saul, because I can't imagine that David ever intended to fight against the Jewish people. I can't imagine that David ever intended to fight against Israelite soldiers, against the army of Yahweh. In effect, against Yahweh Sabaoth, to use the Hebrew phrase, the Lord of the armies. David may be out of fellowship, but he's not that far gone. David is relieved that he's out of this difficult situation of his own making. So like earlier, David uses vague words to play Achish. I think what makes David's deception so effective with Achish is the money. Achish is willing to believe all of this. He's willing to be gullible. I'm not saying that he thinks I want to be gullible, but he's willing to trust David's words, which really are not that persuasive. He's willing to trust David's words. He's willing to believe all of this because he's getting the spoils of war. He's getting a cut of the spoils of war that David's been bringing back to the Philistine king. Because remember, David has been raiding these neighboring lands, not the lands of the Israelites in the area of Judah, but he's been raiding the neighboring enemies of Israel and taking the spoils of war, taking the a lot for himself, and then also giving a significant amount to Achish. And so Achish wants to believe David, because David has become Achish's meal ticket, his gravy train. Money can be a powerful deceiver. You remember what Paul said in 1 Timothy 6:10, "For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil." It doesn't say that money is a root of all sorts of evil. It says the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. If God has blessed you with money, with a lot of money, well, praise God for that. Use it for his purposes. Money is like a tool. It's a shovel, it's a screwdriver, it's a hammer. And either you use it, or it will use you. This is part of what's happening in America today, I believe. We're so concerned and consumed with money that we're willing to overlook all kinds of evil. We're willing to get in line with everybody else who follows the path of the culture, which is in a all-out sprint towards wickedness. We're willing to get in line and follow that path because we're consumed with the cash. As long as the evil doesn't disrupt my cash flow, we think, then let's not make any waves. Let's not disturb anything. Just let's keep our Christian mouths shut about the ways of God. As long as I keep getting my cash flow, I fear that that's what's happening to the Christian in America today. Keep reading in verse 9. "But Achish replied to David, 'I know that you are pleasing in my sight like an angel of God. Nevertheless, the commanders of the Philistines have said, he must not go up with us to the battle.'" For the third time, Achish has declared David innocent. In the New Testament, the son of David is also declared innocent three times by Pilate. Of course, the situation is not perfectly analogous, because the son of David was in fact innocent, sinless, where David is not. For the second time in this chapter, the name of God has proceeded forth from the lips of this pagan Philistine king. He's so grateful for the blessing that David has provided that he compares David to an angel of God. David, on the other hand, is conspicuously silent about God. That's what happens when you're out of fellowship. God is just not that interesting to you when you're out of fellowship, when you're walking down the path of sin and you're liking your sin, you're enjoying your sin. God's not that interesting to you or to me. I'm more interesting to me, and you're more interesting to you when you're walking down that path of rebellion against God. Keep reading in verse 10. "Now then, arise early in the morning," Achish says to David. "Arise early in the morning with the servants of your Lord," meaning the servants of Saul, "who have come with you. And as soon as you have arisen early in the morning and have light, depart." So David arose early, he and his men, to depart in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines. And the Philistines went up to Jezreel. Following the instruction of this pagan king, the overlord of David, David went south, back to Ziklag, and then the Philistines went north to camp in the Jezreel Valley, and ultimately to war against Saul and the Israelites. What we've seen in this chapter is the unstoppable nature of God's will. He executes his will, and no one can stop it. Of course, God's enemies can't stop God, but nor can God's people stop him. God's people who have wandered away from him, which is what's happened with David here. He's living among the pagans. He's not living in the land of promise, though he has received the promise of promises that he's going to be the next king. He's not living in the land of promise. He's not living in the land of the covenant with the people of the covenant. He's living among the pagans, among the Philistines. He's attached himself to a pagan king. He's aligned himself and given his allegiance to a pagan king. And so he has wandered away from God. It was God's will to make David king, not just for the blessing of that immediate era of Israel, because David as king would in fact bring blessing to that era of Israel for a number of decades during his rulership. But also God's design was for the blessing of the ages, not just for that generation of Israelites. Through David's line, God would bring the Son of David into the world, who would bless not just Israel, but all of humanity, not just for one era or two or three, but for all of eternity. David disobeyed God's will and aligned himself with his pagan Philistine overlord, such that Achish expected him to betray Israel and to war against Israel. This would have disqualified David from being king because the people never would have trusted him or followed him. So God intervened to protect David. God intervened to protect David from himself. Now we need to be careful to not misapply this. Don't think I can do whatever I want and God's going to bail me out. I got you, God. I've got you in a box because you save your people from themselves. Please don't read that out of this text. There's always a reckoning. Galatians 6:7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. David developed a practice of sowing deceit. He's done it here with Achish. He's actually done it before in the text. He did it with the high priest earlier here in this chapter, and it cost the high priest his life and the lives of all of the priests at Nob, not only the lives of the priests, but the lives of their wives, the lives of their families, the lives of their neighbors and their neighbors' wives and their neighbors' children. It was a horrible scene where Saul went in and slaughtered all of them, and all of it came about because David had deceived the high priest. Here David has a pattern of deception with respect to Achish. David will do the same thing in terms of sowing deceit during his Bathsheba incident. And ultimately, David will reap what he sows. There's always a reckoning. Later in life, David will suffer the painful effects of deceit from within his own family, and it will be very, very ugly. Let's close there for this evening. Father, we thank you for the opportunity to study your word. We ask that you enlighten us by it. We ask that you challenge us by it, and that you help us metabolize these things into our soul, that we may live by them, that we may learn from the events of David, that we may approach you in wonder and awe and in absolute respect. Help us understand your sovereignty. Help us understand that you move events to accomplish your will, and that your will is utterly unstoppable. Help us submit to you in humility to bring honor to your great name. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.